You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, but not home of a few people anymore.
A big day for Seahawks Twitter.
I mean, a culmination of a lot of big days for Seahawks Twitter. It feels like we had been preparing for this moment for a long time, and it didn't disappoint. I guess we should explain what actually happened first here, which is the beginnings of what now is looking like a major shakeup to the Seahawks coaching staff. We first received word late Tuesday night as we were recording our weekly Peltoncast that offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel had been fired, as reported then by Curtis Crabtree of KJR. And that was followed Wednesday by the announcement first broken by Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times that assistant head coach / offensive line coach Tom Cable was also being fired. And that might not be it, because there's also a possibility that Chris Richard could be out as defensive coordinator, with a report from NFL.com's Ian Rappaport Pete Carroll believes that he might benefit from, you know, another being part of another organization, having another opportunity. Yeah. Which seems like a nice way to put that you don't necessarily want him anymore. We processed the Bevel news a little bit last night, but this is a lot more to process.
Yes. Well, so before we get to talking about the individual firings, I think we should probably move forward with the assumption that Chris Richard will not be the defensive coordinator next year.
I suppose. I mean, I guess you kind of have to do that.
All this day is missing is a really good name. When we look back on this, what are we going to call it? So I went through and came up with some options.
Okay.
This is what I've been most focused for. This is why I want to do this emergency pod. You can either thank or blame Zach Whitman for this.
Yes.
We've agreed that if Zach Whitman asks us to do a podcast at any time, we will do it.
There was at least one time we did not do a podcast after Zach Whitman asked for it.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so here are some of the names that I've come up with for this day. The Blue Wedding.
Okay.
Wednesday, Bloody Wednesday.
Seems a little dramatic.
The Seattle Seahawks occur.
Again, probably a dramatic.
Black and Blue Wednesday. The Pete Tanic. They're only going to get more dramatic.
I don't know if I want that.
The wreck of the VMAC Fitzgerald.
Was what happened to the Cardinals when Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer both retired, the wreck of the Larry Fitzgerald?
Oh, there we go. I'm just trying to reference Gordon Lightfoot as much as possible.
Obviously.
The day the coaching staff died.
Yeah, that's definitely too dramatic.
The disappearance of Flight 9 and 7.
Okay, that's a thinker.
The coordinator purge.
Yeah, that one's more straightforward.
And then finally, the day that we acknowledge what we already knew, which is all the Seahawks need now is an offense, a defense, and some rule changes.
Shouts to the good place. Yeah, I don't know of those which is the winner here. I mean, you know, Pete Carroll talked, first off, when people get fired, they do not die. It is important to note that.
Okay.
It is not the end of the world. Pete Carroll, notably, fired many times as an NFL head coach and came back to win multiple national championships and win a Super Bowl.
Win Forever Wednesday.
Oh. You know, can I tell you something? After we recorded the podcast last night, I went and read some excerpts of Win Forever looking for...
You made that seem like you don't do that every night.
Not every night. I was looking for some sort of guidance on what had transpired. And I got to be honest, I did not find anything in there that really spoke to the decision to fire Daryl Bevel as offensive coordinator.
It seems like it would have been very specific if there would have been something about that.
Well, no, but I mean, there's general thoughts. I mean,
in the ebook release,
we do now have this statement from Pete Carroll.
Okay.
As part of the news today, we are challenged by change, but excited to attack the future with great purpose. So that's where I guess he's philosophically coming down on this. I mean, he also said, I want to thank both Tom and Daryl for their role in helping take this program to a championship level. I will always be grateful for the opportunity to coach and compete alongside these great men.
Okay. So the news started trickling out last night with the Curtis Crabtree tweet, which you heard us respond to in real time. I don't really feel like my thoughts have changed all that much, especially my thought on that they couldn't find Tom Cable to fire him first.
That turned out prophetic.
I mean, not necessarily, but the Tom Cable was going also. I still think Daryl Bevel, all things considered, I think is a pretty good offensive coordinator. We're going to talk about your feelings about offensive coordinator ability in general, and that maybe it was time to go.
All right. I mean, here's a question I think is worth asking, which is there anyone who would believe that even as Daryl Bevel supporters as we have been at times, that if sacrificing Daryl Bevel was necessary to get rid of Tom Cable as offensive line coach and run game coordinator, that was not worth it? Is there anyone who would not have made that particular sacrifice?
No.
I haven't found someone yet. I mean, maybe Doug Baldwin is the one person. So, I mean, I think that I feel a lot better about the direction of the Seahawks offense today than I did last night, when it just seemed like this was Bevel getting fired all by itself and nothing else happening to go along with it. I feel better about that. I mean, I still don't think, like, you know, I made this joke at one point today. Oh, all the Seahawks problems are solved. Like, no, it's not that simple. It, much as we talked about last night, coaching just doesn't matter that much. But it is much harder to make a defense that Tom Cable is the most qualified offensive line coach for the Seattle Seahawks based on the results we've seen over the last few years than it is for Daryl Bevel as offensive coordinator.
Can we go through this timeline-wise also, though? Because there was a moment this morning, so I knew that more news would be coming out today. There was a moment this morning, I think the first thing when I woke up, there was all sorts of Sark hype.
Which I just really don't understand where it came from. Steve Sarkisian is the offensive coordinator of another team in the NFL that won a playoff game. I got to do the math here now. 96 hours ago, maybe 100 at this point, is we're recording this. Like, not that long ago. Like, I know that the world at large is like, Sark sucks because of the fact that, you know, he couldn't keep up the completely outlier season that the Atlanta Falcons offense had in 2016. And the Atlanta Falcons offense, and nobody notices that, hey, Kyle Shanahan's first season offensive coordinator, the Falcons were actually worse offensively than this year. But I don't think that's how Dan Quinn sees it, because Dan Quinn hired Sark a year ago.
You're saying this in response to the idea that the Falcons would be firing Steve Sarkisian.
At the very least, because he's under contract. I mean, the
or
Seahawks are
letting us interview him. Because the Seahawks, they can just reject an interview with Sarkisian, right?
I mean, and the Seahawks wouldn't even think to ask. I mean, it would make no sense to even ask about that kind of a lateral move. I mean, look, the Falcons, unless they were somehow looking to trade him and get compensation, I don't think that would be a realistic situation for the Seahawks, because why would you give up draft picks for an offensive coordinator?
I love the idea of trading draft picks for a coordinator.
Then it would have to be the Falcons wanting to let him go. Not necessarily wanting to fire him, but at least wanting to let him go.
Wanting or be willing to let him go.
Yes.
So then news starts to kind of trickle out.
News is being generous here.
Okay, rumors. I mean, all of this was rumors, right? That there was a chance that Tom Cable would be considered for offensive coordinator.
And I mean, a lot of these things, it's just, it's informed conjecture, but it's conjecture nonetheless. And what happens is that Twitter immediately turns that conjecture into fact.
Yeah.
This is something that happens universally on Twitter, far beyond Seahawks Twitter. And it is one of the least flattering traits of Twitter, of which there are several.
You got
several.
Panic. You got well, to panic.
Look, here's one of my great life philosophies. Like, don't get upset about things before they've happened, because A, they might not happen. And B, even if they do happen, you're going to have plenty of time to be upset. It's not like there's ever a moment in my life where I'm like, man, I regret that I didn't flip out more about the Sonics moving to Oklahoma City before it actually happened, because I just haven't had enough time to be upset about that since. Like, no, I'm good. I've had plenty of time to be upset about that. I am so good there. And that's how I feel about this too. Like, don't panic about Tom Cable is going to be the offensive coordinator until you actually find out whether Tom Cable gets fired hours later. Like, seriously.
And then the rumors started to be that the Seahawks would be looking for a new offensive coordinator who was not Tom Cable, but that offensive coordinator would be able to make a decision about Tom Cable's future.
Which seemed like a reasonable point. I mean, which made sense, because Tom Cable is not strictly just an offensive line coach. You know, again, he was the run game coordinator. He was almost co-offensive coordinator with Daryl Bevel, which, by the way, would have made it really strange if they would have decided to fire Daryl Bevel and not Tom Cable. But sticking a new offensive coordinator with someone with that level of power would not necessarily be, I think, fair for the Seahawks, or a good way for them to attract the most qualified offensive coordinator that they could possibly get at this stage, which is what you want to do when you're going to make a decision to move on from Daryl Bevel.
Then, kind of, I'm going to call this the culmination of the day. We're going to talk about Chris Richard also. There was never any one true moment where it was like, oh, Chris Richard is not going to be the defensive coordinator. Then, later in the day, via tweet from Bob Condotta, which he got credit for nationally, cue the Gary Glitter rock and roll part two, cue the Kool and the Gang, celebrate good times, come on! The most universal excitement I have seen on the internet about anything. The tweet that Bob Condotta has saying that the Seahawks have fired Tom Cable. The GIFs were out of control.
Can I be Debbie Downer here?
Okay.
Along the lines of the same thing. I will say that, again, while getting fired is not dying, I don't feel really good about, like, taking pleasure in someone getting fired, even if it's someone who, you know, as has been pointed out, treating Tom Cable as a human and not just, you know, like some, you know, cog in the Seahawks machine, or however you would treat him, that doesn't necessarily make you feel better about Tom Cable, given his history of domestic violence allegations. That being the case, I still don't think it's a good idea to be happy about someone getting fired.
Can I remind you of how many rushing yards Seahawks running backs had inside of the 10-yard line this year? That is our run game coordinator.
I mean, logically, I think this is best.
I can remind you how many yards they had on zero hands.
I can think it's for the best for the Seahawks without throwing a party.
Mina's description of it being like the Ewoks celebrating on the planet of Endor.
That was quite a description.
I mean, people were ecstatic when this finally happened. Because, you know, honestly, most of this offseason, which granted it's been a very short offseason so far, we kind of kept getting indications that Tom Cable was going to be back. Which, all the way through to the moment when it didn't happen.
Which, again, by the way, let's stop reading so much into these indications that don't actually mean anything. Can we stop?
Your takeaway is that we'll have plenty of time to be unhappy. If there's one thing that you take away from this special Pelton cast, it's that you'll have plenty of time to be unhappy.
Have you ever found yourself wishing you had been unhappier earlier? Ever? Have you ever found that? So we talked yesterday when the Bevel news first broke about kind of our expectations for our baseline expectations for what the offense would have done next year without change, and therefore what we should, you know, kind of the baseline you would expect from a new coordinator, and now, you know, someone who is also, you know, new coordinator, offensive line coach, could be more changes to the offensive staff coming down the road, quite possibly, depending on who gets hired and who they want to hire. We said that we would expect the Seahawks to be 8th to 10th in offensive DVOA next year. Does that change at all, knowing that Tom Cable is not part of the picture?
How much higher do I think they're going to be? Are we going to revise this? Honestly, I don't think that it probably changes anything. Can I move it up a tick? Can I say in like 6 to 8?
You can definitely say that.
I just don't want to put too high expectations, because we're going to come back to this and in some way kind of judge this offensive coordinator, whether they were successful in their first season, based upon these expectations. And if our expectations are too high going into it, I don't think that'll be fair for new offensive coordinator X.
For Steve Sarkisian.
For Coach Sark.
Yes, which obviously is what he ran into this year. Yeah, I mean, I would maybe say 6th through 10th. I still think that, like, you know...
We'll open it up a little bit.
If they're a top 10 offense next year, am I going to be disappointed about that, given where, you know, the run game was this year? No, I'm probably not going to be disappointed by that. But it's towards the lower end, maybe, of you know, reasonable expectations.
Okay, 6th through 10th feels fine. Do you think that they will have a rushing touchdown by a running back?
Yes.
Whoa!
Well, they had one this year.
Okay, what's the over-under for rushing touchdowns by running backs?
5.5.
Still so low. Five and a half.
That's 5.5 times what it was this year.
What's the over-under for rushing yards by running backs inside of the 10-yard line?
I mean, I'm not actually sure how many
like, they should have.
Yeah.
I bet...
More than zero?
Over-under 0.5.
No, I'm taking the over there. I am taking... Put it all on the over there. Is there something you want to see in the next Seahawks offensive coordinator? I mean, you've talked about creativity. Does Cable not being involved change anything about that?
I just don't want creativity now. I don't think this Cable not being involved changes anything for me from what I'd like. I just think that the offensive line is going to play better.
I mean, again, from a resource standpoint, it no longer should be expected that the Seahawks have one of the worst offensive lines in the league. And continuity is an important factor, and we'll see how much of that the Seahawks end up having next year. I mean, certainly a full training camp for Dwayne Brown should help. if they can settle on that combination earlier than they were able to this season, in part because of the injury to George Fant, that should help. But yeah, I mean, you know, from a pass blocking standpoint, I don't know if the Seahawks were quite as bad this year as they had been in the past. The run blocking was just so, so bad. And it'll be interesting to see if they continue to use a zone blocking scheme going forward. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting questions that's up for debate now. That may depend on the offensive coordinator as well as the offensive line coach.
Well, I think the thing that you're most right about is the resources that they've invested in the line. I mean, at this point, the amount of picks that they've invested, the amount of money in players like Dwayne Brown, it seems like they would very much like to have Luke Jokel back, and it's going to be a pretty high number to have Jokel. They've extended Justin Britt. This is not a cheap offensive line anymore.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think the other point I want to make here is, you know, along the lines of the not getting prematurely upset about things, to not be too excited or too down on whoever the Seahawks eventually hire as offensive coordinator, because I don't feel like we have a good grasp on what the difference is between a good offensive coordinator or a bad offensive coordinator. And I think it mostly is determined just by the success of the offense, which, again, I don't think has that much to do with the coordinator. Has something to do, first off, with the head coach of the team, and then also just a lot to do. I mean, so much of this league now, it's the quality of your quarterback. And everyone seems very excited about, most notably, Third Pelton brother Zach, about Eagles quarterback coach John DeFilippo. Like, we're talking about a sample size of Carson Wentz having a good second season, and all of a sudden that turns him into a trendy offensive coordinator choice. How much do we actually know about his ability to coordinate an offense?
Well, I feel like you could say this about almost any offensive coordinator. You can look at the candidates. Mark Trestman was another one that was being thrown around. And Mark Trestman has more experience being an offensive coordinator than John DeFilippo has.
But I feel like if you were to look at Trestman's career, and this is probably true of almost any experienced offensive coordinator, you could take the same career and you could make a case for him as a great offensive coordinator and a bad offensive coordinator, depending on what you chose to highlight.
So your argument is we just don't know how good an offensive coordinator is.
Yeah, I mean,
and a lot of what they do is based upon the talent that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're not very good at evaluating how good head coaches are. And offensive coordinators, I think it becomes exponentially more difficult. And the other aspect of it is, you know, you want to talk about play calling and what we see on Sundays from them. But so much of what makes, you know, a team successful or not has nothing to do with what happens on Sundays. It's about what happens the rest of the week.
Well, can we talk about John DeFilippo for a second?
Sure.
And I think I was saying this to you earlier. One of the reasons that I do believe that I think Pete could be very high on him is you look at that Eagles offense that they ran this year. And granted, he's just the quarterback's coach. He's not even the offensive coordinator. He's not the head coach. He's not the offensive coordinator. He's the quarterback's coach. Carson Wentz had a very good year. But the kind of offense that they ran is kind of perfect world Pete Carroll offense. You know, we talked to Sheil Kapadia about how the Eagles, in a way, kind of were bizarro Seahawks. But they were a team that ran the ball a lot.
Not bizarro Seahawks. Neo Seahawks?
Neo Seahawks.
Bizarro
Seahawks?
Bizarro Seahawks would be a team that passed the ball constantly despite their amazing offensive line. The quarterback was completely immobile.
But that they were like a new, spelled N-E-U, new Seahawks, right? So they ran the ball a lot with a lot of running backs who don't have a lot of pedigree. I mean, they turned LeGarrette Blount into at least a useful running back when, I mean, he was somebody where they're plucking from out of the Eddie Lacy dregs of free agency. They ran the ball a lot. They passed the ball downfield. Carson Wentz had very high yards per attempt. And they managed to make, while running the ball a lot, the quarterback look very good. They managed to make the quarterback an MVP candidate. And yeah, that is exactly what, if you could ask Pete Carroll what the Seahawks could look like, what he would like them to look like next year, I think this Eagles offense, especially with Carson Wentz, is pretty close to it.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, do you want me to make the case against John DeFilippo?
Oh, God.
Do you know the one time that John DeFilippo was an offensive coordinator?
The Browns.
The 2015 Cleveland Browns.
Did they win a game?
They did win games.
How many games did they win?
Multiple, I'm pretty sure.
See, he's that much better than anybody who's come after him.
Do you know where they finished in offensive DVOA that year?
Where did they finish?
27th. And then he got summarily fired after the year and was demoted back to being a quarterback coach. having previously done so for the 2012 through 2014 Oakland Raiders, including where his star protege was Derek Carr.
I really like that guy. He got a lot of promise.
He also credited a team with Terrell Pryor as quarterback. And then there was the year where Carson Palmer in Oakland that year, let's see, because this was right before he got traded. That team went 4-11 Palmer's last year, or his only full year in Oakland, and he completed 61% of his passes for 7.1 yards per attempt and threw 14 interceptions.
John DeFilippo, in his 1 year as Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator, won three times as many games as the Cleveland Browns have won the subsequent two seasons.
Of the Hugh Jackson era, yeah. I mean, again, you can take the same facts. You can take the same facts, and depending on which ones you choose, you can make an argument for or against anyone. So now, having taken that into account, is Chris Richard a good defensive coordinator?
It's always very hard to read Chris Richard.
I have no idea. By the way, one stunning thing. So I wanted to go back and look up where the Seahawks finished in DVOA in recent seasons as part of this. Offensively, they finished 14th and 16th the last 2 years. After that, they were 1st, 5th, 7th, and 4th, dating back to the start of the Russell Wilson era. Defensively, I did this, so they were 2nd, 1st, 1st, 4th during the first 4 years of the Russell Wilson era. They were 5th in 2016. I still think I must have been misreading that. I'm going to go check it again.
Because you think
it seems that unthinkable
to me. Worse or better?
Way worse. Okay. They couldn't stop anyone in the second half of the season in 2016 after Earl Thomas went down.
Post Earl Thomas injury. Yeah. It just wasn't that many games.
It was a healthy number of games. But, you know, the number three rush defense in the NFL, they finished 13th in pass defense in Football Outsiders DVA. And again, 5th overall before last year with myriad injuries dropping to 13th, their first time outside the top 10 in the Russell Wilson era.
Well, and so Chris Richard never took the same kind of heat that either Bevel or Tom Cable took. I mean, obviously, nobody could take the same kind of heat as Tom Cable. On Seahawks Twitter, he was fired 4 seasons ago. But Chris Richard was getting the benefit of the doubt most often. I mean, Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn, neither of them had the kind of injuries. Neither of them had to play without Earl Thomas for a significant period of time. Neither of them had to play without Bobby Wagner for as many games as Bobby missed. Richard Sherman for as many games as he missed this year. Chris Richard was the defensive coordinator for an aging defense.
But I don't know that anyone was looking at it and saying, hey, Chris Richard is doing a great job. There weren't strong Chris Richard takes. And in this case, I think that's appropriate. I really have no feel. Like, as difficult as it is to judge coordinators, as we've already established, it's especially difficult to judge them when you just don't know how good the talent is at this point.
Yes.
This does sound like Pete Carroll has judged Chris Richard.
This is the thing about Pete Carroll, is that I think we knew going into this offseason that the two things Pete would be most upset about, from missing the playoffs, that means that you kind of hone in on what you actually are upset about the previous year.
And I don't like that upset about. I don't think that's how Pete Carroll approaches it. It's what needs to be fixed.
Sure.
It's not blame back. Like, there's a lot of, like, who's to blame for the Seahawks offense?
These are synonyms. You're arguing semantics here.
No, there's a very big difference between blaming someone for something that's happened in the past and evaluating who's best equipped to be good for you in the future.
Okay. So the two things, just rephrasing this for you, so you don't get, I don't want to use the word upset. So the two things that Pete felt like...
Pete Carroll's like not sitting there like, who is going to pay for this season?
That's not Pete Carroll's approach.
Have you even read Win Forever?
I'm saying he's looking at these things and he's upset with the way they turned out the previous year. And so he knows that they need to be fixed for the next year. Okay. You're just adding on a next step. That's all you're doing.
All right.
Would be the run game, because Pete Carroll doesn't want to see...
No rush yards inside the 10.
No rush yards inside the 10 from running backs.
Nope.
He doesn't want to see the worst run game in the NFL by running backs.
Nope.
I'm almost sad that Russell was so good at running so that it skews the stats, because I would have really liked the Seahawks to have been like this historically bad run game so we could really see it.
Like, people who just look at the overall team totals will never understand how bad the Seahawks were at running the football. They just won't. They won't get it.
So the run game, but then also the defense. Pete does not want to have a defense that is finishing outside of the top 10 in DVOA.
And that's where I think this move, assuming it comes to pass, would be interesting, because, you know, would it be Pete Carroll kind of reestablish, like, taking a larger role in the defense? Or I think that's a possibility, which it'll be interesting to see whether that would involve bringing in another younger coach along the lines of Richard to grow into that role, which is kind of similar to what Dan Quinn was, you know, certainly when he was named defensive coordinator, or whether it's kind of bringing in another more experienced hand to work with him.
I mean, the thing that I think we've learned from all of these hires is that it'll probably be somebody who's kind of in the Pete Carroll coaching tree.
Yeah, that's probably the case. I mean, there are some surprises at times, but it's a lot of people he has experience with.
Offensively, there could be a surprise. That's why I don't think it's surprising to see, you know, DeFilippo, Trestman, any of the other names who've been thrown out as offensive coordinator, because it feels like Pete is more willing to reach outside of the Pete Carroll tree. But defensively, he has consistently shown that he wants people who have played, or not played, maybe played, but who have coached in his system before.
Well, because it's his system. I mean, I think that's the difference. And that's probably the other aspect of we talked about, you know, why Richard doesn't get the same kind of heat as Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable. Because ultimately the defense is seen as much more Pete Carroll's creation than the work of the defensive coordinator, which is why there was such continuity from the Dan Quinn, from the Gus Bradley era to the Dan Quinn era.
And really into the Chris Richard era too.
Yes.
You know, I don't think the defense didn't play radically different at any point during this time.
I mean, I think we maybe saw him blitz a little bit more. I think he was a little more willing to do that.
But was that in response to the injuries?
This year, I think that's probably the case. Last year, it seemed more just like wanting to be aggressive and, you know, take the action to the opponent as opposed to, you know, a lot of the Pete Carroll defense tends to be a little more conservative. We're going to rely on our front four to create pressure.
You and me
and
are
trust
the
our
most extreme don't blitz perspective.
Are we?
I'm very much on the extreme don't blitz perspective.
I have no strong take about it.
I'm very, very much of the perspective of trying to get pressure from the front four or whatever it should be.
I mean, obviously, if you're able to get pressure with the front four, hey, by all means, that's great. Sometimes, you know, it can work to drop eight and you know, just try to create coverage sacks that way. I mean,
God, like Penn State against UW.
Or like UW against Wazoo. But I think there's a variety of different approaches that can be successful and that are perfectly valid on defense. You are coming here for the most lukewarm take possible. You are finding it.
So one thing, I mean, do you feel like these changes among the coordinators portend to what we'll see this off season with the personnel?
I don't know. That's tough to say. I mean, I think you could look at it and say we need to change either the scheme or the players. I mean, first off, there's going to be a lot of change in terms of the players just from a cap standpoint. Like, they can't re-sign everyone. They cannot do it. So there's definitely going to be change. I think, you know, you may look at it as something of an either-or, and therefore, now that you've made these kind of wholesale scheme changes, that you don't necessarily need to change as much in terms of personnel. But at the same time, you know, there may be, you know, for example, if they do go away from the zone blocking scheme, well, now your needs and the offensive line are slightly different, which is one of the benefits, I think, of continuity, is that you don't have that kind of disruption to the roster.
Maybe. I don't. There's not a lot that I take from this season, and then I think to myself, let's carry that over from the offensive line.
Yeah, that's completely fair.
Or that these linemen were specifically drafted as great zone blocking linemen.
But that's always going to be an element of why you're drafting players. You drafted different players for a zone blocking scheme than you're going to for a man blocking scheme. That's, you know, it's not a night and day difference, but it is different. I think, by the way, to go back.
Okay, here's what I have for that line. Here's my perspective about the line. When it was the shipwreck, the Andrea Dora, is that the, I was trying to think of that.
Yeah.
for one of the names for
you wanted multiple shipwreck references.
Yeah, I really I had two already. I had the Pete Tanik and the wreck of the V Mac Fitzgerald. Here's my perspective about the offensive line.
In this case, wouldn't Pete be the iceberg? Maybe
Pete-berg?
9-7 was the iceberg, I guess.
We need to have a Costanza perspective about the offensive line, though.
If everything you're doing is wrong, then
the opposite has to be right.
Yeah.
Because whatever was happening this season and last season was wrong. So the opposite has to be right. Or this was your take about who will be blamed for all of the Seahawks problems going forward. The opposite may also be wrong.
Yes. I think that is very possible that, like, you can be 90 degrees off, and then if you go 180 degrees, now you're 90 degrees off in the other direction. Like, I think that's a very realistic possibility.
So what do you think? I want to do this for the defense also.
Yeah.
What do you think we should reasonably expect right now the Seahawks defense to finish in DVOA for the 2018 season?
So I don't know if I so five consecutive top five finishes from 2012 through 2016. I don't know if I actually said that they finished 13th this season. I think around 10th is a reasonable, again, kind of similar to the offense. Maybe a little more pessimistic because I do think that there are going to be, you know, that's an aging group, but I do think there's going to be some significant turnover there.
It's going to depend on the turnover, but my expectation right now is that the defense next season will be worse than they are this season.
Worse? Wow. So you think it's going to be approximately an average defense next year?
I mean, things may change. This coordinator may do a great job. But I look at this defense, and we don't know about Sheldon Richardson. They're very injured at a lot of important places. It looks like right now that Cliff Avril and Cam Chancellor might retire. There are going to be a lot of new players on this defense and a lot of unproven players on this defense.
I feel somewhat better about the young talent that they have. Guys like Jaron Reed, Naz Jones stepping into larger roles, being productive. Shaq Griffin stepping into potentially a lead cornerback role, depending on what happens with Richard Sherman next year. I think the talent on this defense was better than where they finished this year. It is interesting, though. Let's say that the Seahawks ended up like a top 10, the number 10 offense and the number 10 defense.
Yeah. I'm going to say 12 to 15 for the defense, though.
I was looking for who was the closest to finishing precisely 10th in both categories.
The Falcons, isn't it?
No, it's not the Falcons. The Falcons' defense was terrible this year. It was 22nd. They did finish 9th in offense, so that's almost exactly in that range. I mean, the answer actually is the Seahawks finishing 14th and 13th. That was pretty much the closest that anyone got to 10th in both categories. You just don't necessarily see that combination a lot.
But the difference in being slightly better on offense and slightly better on defense could be two wins.
Absolutely. And then we haven't even got to special teams where, the Seahawks, another place that they probably should be reevaluating at this point, the coaching.
Go back and listen to our Jason Myers talk yesterday.
Oh, please do. No, I don't think anyone did.
Giving the people what they want.
Listen to our Jacob Eason talk that no one really paid any attention to, sadly. All right. On that note, thanks for listening to this special edition of the Pelton Cast.
Thanks.